All right, well we'll get started briefly before Rusty joins, and maybe we'll try to set the stage a little bit without insulting Rusty. So for those who caught the chat that I did with in Miami, which was recorded and I believe is now on YouTube, which was about a similar topic, we went into a little bit in kind of 35 minutes, what will probably take 2 hours here now, kind of the tension between kind of on one end, Bitcoin is a consensus system wherein, nodes need to be running the same rules. You have all these full nodes out in the network that are all kind of monitoring the blocks and checking every block and verifying everything and enforcing a set of consensus rules, which kind of to some extent defines Bitcoin, right? We have these hard-coded rules around the coin limit, the 21 million coins, the script rules, all of the verification of signatures in transactions, and those are enforced by every full node. And in order for everyone to have the same view of the network and actually agree on who has what Bitcoin and what the current block height is and everything like that, nodes have to enforce the same rules so that they come to the same decision. That's kind of on one end of the spectrum, because obviously the easiest way to do that is you get someone to tell everyone what software to run, and then everyone runs that software, or maybe you have one node, and then of course everyone agrees. Here now we've got a Rusty. And that would be great, except then of course that wouldn't be Bitcoin because you would just have a database. On the other end, on the far end of the spectrum, you have basically, people, you don't want anyone to tell anyone what to do. You want the hey Rusty, can you use your mic working?
I believe it is. Oh,
Hey, look at
yes,
that.
maybe. Wow. Okay, this is complicated.
Congratulations.
Yeah, this is a complicated setup. I'm not using my laptop. I'm using my phone and I plug things in and yeah, 12 minutes late, new record.
Right. Well, we figured it out in the end. So I was trying to set the stage, and maybe you guys will disagree with a little bit, but I think there's kind of this tension between completely centralized Bitcoin, where everyone runs the same software because someone tells them what to do, and you kind of this desire for everyone to run the same consensus rules and keep the network as a consensus system together. And on the flip side, of course, not wanting to tell anyone what to do and having this kind of chaos of, who's right, what are the consensus rules, and no one quite knows what the consensus rules are, but at least no one is in control of Bitcoin. No one gets to decide what the rules of Bitcoin are, because of course that would also kind of defeat the point of Bitcoin. Is that kind of a reasonable mental model, especially from Rusty? I think you might disagree a little bit there.
No, I think that's a perfectly valid and accurate kind of high level summary of like where we're at. In particular, there's this fulcrum point, right? If the rules are set, all right, it's like it's this is Bitcoin and this isn't, then that's a much simpler discussion. But of course, when you're talking about changing the rules themselves, then that's kind of you've introduced a weak point into the whole discussion of like, well, is old Bitcoin pre-rules Bitcoin or so we do get this into these definitional kind of games, but also it is a fundamental problem then, right? That you don't have in a static system. So, I think there's a huge appeal. I think everyone kind of feels this draw towards the ossification argument, right? That if we just didn't touch anything, it would be so much simpler, right?
But we want
And yeah,
alternate.
that's right. We just kind of go, well, that's it. That's Bitcoin. Kind of take it or leave it. But the tension against that is, of course, there's always more cool stuff. There's always more, there are improvements to make and things like that. So I think that's the meta problem, right? That we're, we I in there's in an ideal sense, it'd be great if we never changed the rules. But in a practical sense, we're going to want to. So there's part of me that goes, we should change the rules as quickly as possible now because it's only going to get harder. And then I will
Right.
switch, and old Rusty in 10 years' time will be like, no, ossification is cool. So before we get to that, we should try to get these things. So I guess if you look at things that way though, then the precedent arguments are a lot weaker. You're like, yeah, it doesn't really matter how we change things because we're just going to stop doing it at some point. Right? Because you could be like, well, you know, we're sort of futzing around at the moment with this stuff. But, you know, eventually it'll just be frozen. And we'll be like, well, that's cool. Okay, so we kind of did some, you know, perhaps not ideal ways to upgrade in the past, but that's okay because we're done now. We're all finished. I suspect, however, technology being what it is, that ossification will never be complete. So from that point of view, maybe it is important.
Yeah, I tend to, you know, I agree with you. I would love some ossification, but at the same time, we at least have a full plate for the next few years in terms of things we want to add between, you know, Sighash no input for L2, between fixing time warp and 64 byte transactions, which is an important bug fix, between some kind of covenants, hopefully, and that's going to be a whole long debate, figuring out what kind of covenants we might or might not want in Bitcoin. And then there's probably one or two I missed, but
input signature. Cross input signature aggregation is the other one.
Graph trade, man.
Oh man, really?
Yeah.
See? Too many.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't think we're ever going to get there. And so with that in mind, I mean, it was kind of this figuring out, you know, I think I went into the whole current Taproot debate very much in the same vein as you, Rusty. We were like, we got to figure this out. We want to do like a really great way to do soft fork activation. And, you know, I wrote this whole like long missive maybe a year and a half ago now almost about, you know, we can do this multi-step process where we try miner activation. And then if we don't, then we do like a flag day. But here's like considerations for that. And then my head got bashed in on, you know, strong disagreement from too many people, and we ended up compromising. But I think I went into it with the same view as Rusty. But Rusty, I think you still hold the view that we should have figured out a more long-term strategy for fork activation versus.
Yeah, I think that's so one of the meta arguments here was like, should we be looking for the ultimate scheme that we can use so we can kind of ossify on that at least, right? And so we go, cool, we know how to do this now and here's how it's done. Or did we just go practically like, that's really hard and that's a long-term process and Taproot's non-controversial, so let's just get that in and worry about it later. You know, which is kind of what ended up happening because everyone was like, well, come on, this is not that hard, let's just do it. Which you know, I think is fine. But you know, inevitably you feel like there's a bit of a missed opportunity. If only we'd done the perfect thing the first time. But you know, I think in real life that was maybe never going to happen.
Yeah, I think the problem is we too strongly disagree on what's perfect. I mean, I think at least the two of us probably have diametrically opposing views on how much to lean on miner activation, and maybe to go into a brief description for people here. Miner activation in this context is this kind of has this useful property, right? Where we say, okay, you know, we have this far one side of the spectrum where we want all nodes have to enforce the same consensus rules, and how do we achieve that? And that's kind of an explicit goal that like the network needs to stay together. I guess the explicit goal isn't that everyone is enforcing the same consensus rules necessarily, although that's important. It's that the network stays together and there is one Bitcoin, and hopefully there's even not too many kind of forks and reorgs where, you know, if there's a big reorg, then someone might lose funds. And so miner activation is this neat compromise between we don't want anyone to tell anyone what to do, and we need the network to upgrade and be running the same software all at once, but we can kind of cheat and say like, okay, well, if miners are enforcing the rules, then that's fine, because now we have the network stays together and miners aren't going to mine. As long as miners are not mining an invalid block, as long as they don't mine a block that's invalid according to the new soft fork rules, then the network will stay together and we don't have to worry about kind of reorgs where some nodes might have enforced the rules and some nodes won't. Of course, we don't want to lean on that as a consensus, as a kind of security mechanism. Like just having miners enforce the rules of Bitcoin would kind of defeat the point of Bitcoin. Why even bother if it's just, you know, however many miners enforcing the rules and miners could choose to steal your coins? But at least in the short term, it's a very useful kind of cheat code here. And I think, I don't know to what extent Rusty views that it's required or at least useful to to use minor activation. I think my point in my initial missive was basically like minor activation is this great cheat code, so we should try to use it if we can. And that's kind of what Speedy Trial ended up being about, is here's this great thing where it keeps the network together, and so let's try it and see if it works. And if it doesn't, we'll revisit and we'll do something else. But it's a great initial attempt, because if it does work, it's maybe the best outcome. Would you agree with that, Rusty, or would you rather we have not done it to begin with and do something
else? No. So I used to dislike minor activation, because it's like, well, it's like, you know, the guy searching for his keys under the street lamp. And they go, but you dropped your keys over there. And he goes, yeah, but the light's here, right? Minor activation is good because it's easy to count in a decentralized manner, right? Proof of work makes that easy, right? It doesn't mean anything in the sense that miners can say, yeah, sure, like activate, whatever. It doesn't actually guarantee they're enforcing or anything like that. But since the aim is for everyone on the network wants to be in the supermajority, everyone wants to upgrade. So it's kind of a, you know, it's a signaling mechanism, right? So the miners can signal to say, yes, we're all on board. And that kind of convinces everyone else is convinced that this is really going to happen. And kind of we all move forward together kind of thing, right? So the miners move forward as a group, and that does lock in some sort of, you know, as you say, not perfect, but some guarantees. I used to think that was kind of hacky, like, you know, we're doing it just because it's, you know, because we're using the miners to activate because we can count them, right? In a decentralized way. Everyone can independently count, cool, how many blocks have flagged and everything else. But I think there's a second reason that it's really clever, and that is that miners are uniquely vulnerable to forks, right? They really, really, really want to be mining the main chain, right? So they have a real incentive to be in the supermajority, which is stronger than a normal person, right? A normal person, even an economic actor, can probably pause for a little bit, right? If there's a chain fork and shit's going down, they can kind of stop for a while and go, cool, okay, we're just not taking deposits or whatever it is for 24 hours until this is sorted out. But miners kind of have to decide what chain to mine every, you know, nanosecond. So they're kind of uniquely vulnerable to economic pressure from the rest of the network. So they really care, right? In other words, so using them as your canary is also kind of clever in an economic way, I think. So I actually really like miner activation as a mechanism more than I did when I first kind of, you know, thought about it. So yeah, I agree. Miner activation is really a good tool for more than the simple reason that they're easy to count, and that if they were to all activate, that would give us some guarantees. I think they actually have a clear interest in being in the supermajority, right? So they are kind of representative. I originally thought of miners as like a kind of like a jury pool, right? They're selected from sort of random Bitcoin users, and they're the ones that you measure to kind of go, yes, is the network upgraded? But I think that's a little bit weaker than my original thought, because they are a distinct group and they don't necessarily have the same economic interest as the general broader Bitcoin economic community, right? There are cases where you can see splits. Of course, that's happened before. But I do think they're vulnerable to the greater community in a way that others aren't necessarily. So I think that is probably more important than the idea that the miners are just representative, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I've never actually kind of thought about it in that context. Are you saying also kind of in the context of like you have if you have some kind of contentious split and there are two, presumably maybe two Bitcoins that are going to come out of it, miners, you know, you can't sell coins instantly when you mine. There is some time lag, probably, you know, probably on the order. I mean, I guess what you have 100 blocks before you're allowed to spend it, so almost a day.
Yeah.
And so you really need to make sure that you're mining something that's going to be spendable in a day and going to have value in a day.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we saw this with some miners across the Ethereum Classic split. Some of them were ethically opposed to Ethereum, but they didn't last. They lasted way less than a day. They lasted hours, and they flipped, right? Even though they were like, no, we shouldn't fork, blah, blah, blah. Nope. Nope, 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 right? You've got this huge economic weight on you, and you have to care. Other people can sit on the sidelines and hodl, right? And go, you know, I'll sort it out later. And even people who are actively economically active tend not to be, like, you know, in that critical zone. They can go, oh, you know, we're going to pause for a few hours while we sort this out. Miners don't get that choice, right? So, you know, I think it does really make them vulnerable, which kind of makes them a really good proxy for what the network wants. Not perfect, right? But if you have to have one, I think it's you know, there are as good a choice as any.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, I guess to some extent, I was hoping you'd push back on me more here, Rusty. But that's interesting. I mean, I guess my view, you know, I would push back a little bit on the framework of using them as, to some extent, you're kind of almost arguing that miners define the consensus rules by, you know, sure, they have this economic pressure to go along with the economic majority, or what they believe the economic majority will be in a day or so. But I think also it might, I guess my view of miner activation was much less decision oriented and much more just kind of that the rules of the game are ultimately defined by the nodes people operate. And I don't think there's any way in any activation method where you can get away from that, right? Because those nodes, or at least economically active nodes and those kind of individuals receiving coins on a full node, that they decide what is valid, what is a block and what isn't. And if, you know, you can have the miners change, right? You could have miners enforce rules today and then, you know, they get kicked out of China and somebody, they sell their ASICs, which is something that's happening a lot right now. And then somebody else is mining tomorrow and they may not be enforcing whatever that rule is that they said they wanted to enforce. And so if you want security for your funds, if you want to receive coins and trust that no one else can spend them, then you better be relying on every full node is enforcing those rules. Otherwise, you know, you wouldn't reasonably call that having the coins. And so I think, you know, in the context of like a fork, I always think about miners as just a pure like bridging that gap, bridging that time period between when nodes have upgraded, when some nodes have upgraded and like we want to, you know, we want to activate quickly. We don't necessarily want to wait 3 years until all nodes have upgraded, and that time point where kind of all nodes have upgraded, everyone's enforcing the rules and we're good to go.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely fair. And yeah, I'm talking in the context of like a decision is being made as in like, you know, upgrade or not, basically. And using them as like the first pass is I think economically reasonable and practical, right? Now the bigger sense of like what do they decide to stop enforcing like SegWit tomorrow? That's kind of a bigger question. That is a little bit, I think, out of bounds. But, you know, you start to get into very meta kind of like, but you can never know what anyone else is thinking, right? For all you know, you're the only node in the network that's actually enforcing any of the Bitcoin rules, right? And the only way to find that out is the hard way. and so, you know, to some extent, it's all a confidence game of going, well, you know, I'm reasonably confident that other people are also enforcing these rules. And, you know, it kind of spreads out from there. But that's fundamental to the nature of money, right? Suddenly everyone tomorrow goes, no, that's no longer money. You're screwed anyway. So it's always a consensus system. And you're right. I don't think we can get away from that. When we're talking about miner activation, it's important that, you know, I think it's perfectly valid for to use miner activation pretty much the way we do. I think we kind of stumbled into it, but I think it actually worked for a number of really good reasons. The question is then what happens if we do end up with controversy, right? If we end up with miners versus basically the economic user base, and we've given the miners, okay, cool, you're the ones to activate this. We will activate once we've seen your flagging, you know, 90%, et cetera, threshold. And that fails to happen. And of course, that's the crisis moment, right? What happens then, right? What happens when there's a split between what the economic majority want and between what the miners are prepared to do? Because almost by definition, you know, this is the whole, right? Previously with BIP9, it was like, well, if they don't activate, it doesn't activate, right? And it turned out that was a hole that we did not intend to go through. So just trying to address that is, I think, the crux of the question. I think definitely miner activation is the way to go. But then, yeah, the key question is what happens if they don't?
I'll let you go ahead and kick off that conversation and then respond to you. Or AJ.
Yeah, AJ, we haven't heard much from you. I realize that you're still probably pre-coffee.
I'm drinking tea, not coffee. I don't know if that helps.
Has your caffeine kicked in yet?
Isn't it like 5 a.m. there?
No, it's about 6 here. I'm half an hour later than
Oh, of
you
course.
because
Right.
it's not
Oh,
daylight
great.
savings now.
Okay. Excuse me.
So, I mean, one of the things that I wonder about is how much we have to like risk conflicts with miners in the first place, because we've essentially only had that with SegWit. And if you believe the ASIC boost story about why that happened, then we could have done SegWit without conflicting with ASIC boost by having, say, the transactions get sorted before we do the SegWit commitment. So, like, was having all that controversy the best way of doing it, or should we have waited another 3 months and rejigged the way SegWit worked and then activated it that way? Like putting a lot more emphasis on actually getting consensus rather than trying to force stuff through seems like the first sort of strategy that we should be kind of focusing on to me, especially if we want countries all around the world that might be halfway at war with each other to all be adopting Bitcoin and whatever else.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of my view on it, and I'm sure Rusty will push back a little bit here, is that there really needs to be a kind of two-step process, and the first is assuming kind of miner activation fails in some way, shape, or form, but that we as a community think that we still have consensus for a change, that were there an activation method mechanism that we could somewhat agree on, that everyone would be using that in some way such that they enforce the new rules, and that becomes the definition of Bitcoin because everyone's enforcing those new rules. Then I think there has to be a kind of two-step where you have a community agreement process building consensus around a concrete set of rules in the form of a software, around an actual software release that does something to enforce the rules at some point in the future. And only once people believe there's consensus for it should people run it, right? So you shouldn't, I guess, in my view, and I'm hoping Rusty will push back a bunch on this, that the desire for the community to all be running the same version of the software, running the same consensus rules, and enforcing the same set of consensus rules should be kind of treated as of utmost importance, such that everyone only actually switches the set of consensus rules that they're running once they believe everyone else is also ready to switch the set of consensus rules that they're wanting running, so that, and this is kind of a like an individual thing, right? Like we can't force anyone to do anything, nor should we be able to. And so I think that this should be kind of something that people focus on when they decide to change the set of consensus rules they're running, is everyone else ready to do this right now as well, or at least by the time this set of consensus rules is going to begin.
Yeah, so I mean, Anthony's point about like let's not do that again is a good one, right? And your point as well, like let's make sure we have consensus before we go, right? Before we even get to the miner activation point, right? We should have been broadly in agreement. Certainly in an ideal world that would happen. And the thing is, so to be fair though, saying oh, don't do that, we didn't know, right? Nobody thought that SegWit was controversial until it was. So, I think that's unlikely to happen again. It was kind of a unique set of circumstances, but once is more than zero. So I kind of, it is definitely worth thinking about what would happen if we would see something like this again, where of course everyone thinks it's a good change that should go in. Otherwise it wouldn't have gone through the developer step, right? There would have been pushback at this stage. We would have known it was controversial, and controversial is no. There would have been enough people hopefully saying, no, although we like it, it's obviously controversial. Let's not do it. Because, supermajority consensus is vital to what Bitcoin is. But assuming that, we got through that step, through whatever means, then we're into miner activation, and then the miner activation fails, and what do we do? I think is, other than saying don't get to that. It's like, well, yeah, I think it would be nice to kind of have some kind of plan of what would be the next step, right?
So I agree with the last part, but just to criticize the first part, on the way we did SegWit, we had basically a proposal come out in end of December and then had the code more or less finalized by April, which was all part of the miners want us to rush and businesses want us to rush because we need to upgrade the block size, and this is the easy way to do it. So let's get it done as quickly as possible. And like 3 or 4 months to criticize the spec and get feedback, especially over something that's kind of a competitive advantage that people don't want to reveal, is just, I mean, evidently ended up as not enough time for that. So
Would
it's,
time have helped though, AJ? I'm not sure that more time would have made them
well,
maybe leak, maybe it would have leaked. I don't know.
if we, well, like a year later, we had Greg's ASIC boost exists post. So like, if we'd still had all the controversy about that, that wasn't quite anyone criticizing, but everyone saying, "Oh no, we have to do the hard fork as well. We have to. Why do we have to? Why do we have to?" ASIC boost exists. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe, but I feel like 3 or 4 months is just not enough time to get that
Yeah,
sort of criticism.
look, I think slower and steadier is like ossification light, right? We're definitely going to the
Yeah.
stage where we're not going to see anything that quick. But to some extent, post-mortem of the past isn't all that useful for future. I mean, so how would this happen again? I don't think we're going to have an ASIC boost 2 or anything. But I accept that existence of that to know that there are unknown unknowns, right? Or that things could happen where we thought we had consensus, but suddenly a particular group, for whatever reason, did not previously disclose, and they do not like it, and we end up in this kind of issue. And I think this is important because as Bitcoin becomes more important, you do get more interests who don't necessarily play fair, who don't openly contribute and openly criticize and bring their genuine concerns, right? We're going to see more gamesmanship. We're going to see more crap, right? And I think that's a really solid argument for having a no, this is how we do upgrades, because things could get will get inevitably get kind of crazy if there's like psyops and all kind of weird stuff happening to try to manipulate things, and we don't even know why it's happening, right? So I'm not sure that we will
But
know in the future.
is there even a better way to kind of flush out legitimate concerns during a process? I mean, I think one thing that I had thrown out there during the kind of peak of like Taproot debate and like, no, we have to do UASF, no, we have to do miner activation, no, we have to do this or that or whatever, is I just said like, look, I mean, this debate that's happening right now or at the time in public very loudly and with lots of people kind of taking an active role, but everyone saying yes, Taproot good, is maybe itself evidence that there is no kind of nothing like ASIC boost or even maybe a less legitimate argument against it. But that kind of that lack of debate about it might itself mean that we're good to go and we should just do a flag day. But I think something that I had argued early on, kind of in that initial post a year and a half ago, was that the process of doing a miner activation itself kind of forces out these objections, hopefully, because people are going to go do something to block it, you know, and that probably means lobbying miners. Maybe that's okay as long as we learn that people are against it, and then we take that into consideration as we move on to whatever the next step is. Forcing the activation in some way or another.
Yeah, I think that's actually important, both in the small, right? Flushing out concerns, getting everyone heard, but also in a meta point, right? So people know that they get an opportunity to get heard, is actually important too, right? Because I suspect, I mean, we very roughly divide into multiple groups of people, like the miners over here, the developers over here, users, economic users over here. But there's a lot of overlap between those groups. But at least having a method where they feel they are heard and they can contribute is good for like just engagement. It means likely they're more likely to actually pipe up earlier. And this idea of like they might quietly build resentment and then it blows up at some future point is an issue. But also in a case where we do face external threats and everything else. If everyone feels that they are, part of the community and they're heard and they have a role and everything else, that is I think useful and builds robustness into the whole, the whole Bitcoin system, right? So I think you can make the point more, even more strongly, that having this minor activation and these methods of like, okay, so we go through this and then we do this, means that people do feel included and they do feel like they have a role and they kind of know what they're supposed to do. I guess my only point,
Maybe to
sorry.
no, continue.
As my only point to that is, that's where that's the mental model that I came with, and thinking, well, in the next steps, then if the next step after like a minor activation failure was a UASF, then defining what that would look like and having the pieces in play means that you've also got to define role for those people. So you're a Bitcoin user, you're an economic actor, you should have a business plan. Like, what happens? Here's the method, here's what happens. Devs propose, miners activate, and then users override, and you should kind of be ready for that, right? Because I think then
Right,
that group feels they're heard.
I guess maybe to get into it then, what does that look like? And maybe to provoke a little bit of disagreement here, how do we make sure that, I mean, you said kind of developers, miners, users. I think maybe developers, miners, economic actors is a better terminology, but
Yes.
how do we make sure that economic actors have a robust voice, hopefully early in the process, obviously as early as possible. We'd love economic actors to be following the developer mailing lists and probably ignoring most of the garbage, but at least responding when someone says, here's a proposed change, and I think we should do this, and people should be hopefully as early in the process as possible. But how do we make sure that they, to your point, kind of feel that they have an outlet to express it? Because I think that's maybe one of the hardest things to express. There's no kind of built-in mechanism in the consensus protocol for users to say something.
Yeah, no, that's right. And Anthony's point about time, right? Time is really important because signaling is weak and very noisy, but over long periods of time, it does become hard to fake, right? So, and I think to some extent, making it, that inclusivity and making sure the users are heard and everyone is convinced that the users are heard and the users are convinced the users are heard means the miners are less likely to fuck it up, right? Because they're like, well, we know what the users want. And alluding to what I said earlier, I think miners are uniquely vulnerable to what users want, which is why they're like, well, maybe even we don't want it as miners, but what even worse would be to be off the supermajority. So we're going to be forced there. So let's go there. So I think it is important, and making that whole proposal process as robust as possible. And I should shout out here to AJ particularly for his work on the Taproot stuff and review and everything else. I mean, these steps are incredibly important, because they're important in themselves, but they're also important so that everyone knows that they happen. But I'm assuming that we get to the point where, for whatever reason, we have failed at this, right? Users made their voice heard, everyone thought they were in agreement, and then miners refused to activate, right? They kind of went, no, we're not doing it. It doesn't matter whether it's rational or not. It doesn't matter whether it's for legitimate reasons or not, right? It may be seen as completely illegitimate. Now, actually, no, that does matter. If they convince the user base that no, there's a legitimate reason they should not be activated, then I think, oh, okay, we didn't think of that, or for whatever reason, right? So there's some reason, okay, you're right, that would destroy miners, we didn't realize. Now, I consider that case unlikely, but it is nice to have that. So there should be an option to go, great, maybe we let it go at this point. But the more likely case of that we've seen in the past of like, well, they're not activating and we really want it, so how do we force it? I think that's the crux of the decision, right? Now, one thing is to say, well, we don't have a system for that, right? There's nothing in the Constitution that says what to do in this case. We make it up as we go along. And that's always tempting because you go, well, we'll have more information at the time, but it also adds uncertainty. And I think having a point where we go, well, if we get to this, this is what the plan is, that is broadly agreed on beforehand, avoids us trying to make it up in the moment.
I think there is an advantage to uncertainty there as well, though. If you've got some miners that are hostile to economic node consensus, whatever, then if they know exactly what your response to that's going to be, they can plan for it and try to subvert it as well. Whereas if they don't know what's coming up, then you've got a little bit more flexibility to respond kind of adaptively to it.
Perhaps, but I prefer my civil wars on a timeline. So I kind of like to have a drop dead date, right? And that's one of the things about the BIP-8's the style, lock in equals true. You know when it's going to happen, right? Actually, you don't anymore. But if it was on block height, you'd know when it was going to happen, right? Space is going, well, in the last week of activation, if it hasn't activated, then something will happen. At least kind of gives you a roadmap, and that at least constrains the battlefield somewhat, I think. And I have a huge sympathy with that idea. Now, there are technical reasons why I don't think we're ready for that, and there would be a huge scramble for a whole pile of reasons. I think, for example, Bitcoin Core should probably track proof of work valid block headers that are not otherwise valid, for example. They should be propagated through the network. So you can simply track. There is another fork out there, by the way, that is going on and doing all this stuff. And there are sort of mechanical things like that that we should probably would be great to improve. And Anthony's referred to those before, right? But that aside, I think I think having it just completely uncertain doesn't allow for the kind of it's sort of the inclusivity argument, right? Saying, cool, at this point, then the role of the users is to force the UASF, or the role of the developers is to put in a forcing function, a checkpoint activation kind of flag day thing, and the user's role is to upgrade to that, right? But I think, sorry.
You can finish that thought if you want. I don't know if there was something else here.
Yeah, well, then we get into like who does it, right? Do we just leave it to the users? Do we say no, the developers will release a new version and it will make the call. And I have really strong opinions on which way that should go, for example. And the problem is that, again, timelines, right? If you want a fixed timeline, you call it the end of this 1 year period, there will be an event. Then you've already constrained your timeline because you're 6 months in before you realize you're in a crisis, right? And now, shit, you've got 6 months to decide what to do. And that's not very long if you're talking about getting massively wide deployment of new software, right?
So
Whatever it is.
I want to kind of agree with you and then disagree with you. I think I agree with you over AJ's claim that I do agree that we'd really like some level of certainty, if nothing else, because Bitcoin is an economic system, and just kind of from a practical lens, people are trying to use Bitcoin to pay each other in apparently El Salvador, and we'd like Bitcoin to continue to be available for them and something that they can kind of use robustly and trust that their coins are something they can use and that they're going to be available in the future. But I think I have the opposite view from you over what UASF implies here. In fact, I would argue that UASF adds more uncertainty, especially this model of kind of users forcing an activation by telling miners by running software that requires signaling, specifically. It doesn't resolve the issue in my mind, right? Because unless you know for a fact that basically all the economic nodes are running this UASF and defining the rules to be X, just saying that some users are going to define the rules to be X and then they're saying that they're going to fork off and create a different fork if miners don't signal and activate the soft fork, or the new rules, doesn't it's still uncertain, right? Because if I'm just someone from the outside watching it on Twitter, I see a bunch of people with hats on saying, we're running this UASF software. And then I look to, probably I look to exchanges, I look to, any large merchants, I might look to apparently the government of El Salvador, as to like, what do people who are large economic actors in the space, what are they going to do? What software are they running and what are the consensus rules that they're going to enforce? And I might come away not knowing, or I might come away with, different groups saying different things, at least in the context of kind of SegWit 2x, what we basically saw, which maybe is the best analogy for this, or maybe SegWit, what we saw a lot of people just saying like, we're going to do what hash rate does, which is really terrible, or We're going to list both and we're going to let the market decide. You know, I think that's just more uncertainty, and I'm not sure how that really solves the issue.
To be fair, when we've got to this point, right, it's all shit. All the good options are gone. The miners have failed to activate. The developers have been blindsided, right? We're in deep shit, right? So yeah, it's uncertainty. We're in it, right? So you don't really, I don't think there's any solution that brings certainty, right? Developers could go, right, fuck it, we're going to activate, here's Flag Day. But then you've got uncertainty too, right? Who's running that? Is that really running? Or do you just let it go? Do you just go, nope, the miners blocked it. We are not going to push it. That's done. We're ossified now. That was the last soft fork we're ever going to get through. I think having and look, either of those, like so you know, kind of picking one and going, okay, well, this is what we do. I actually think the latter one's probably silly, but you know, I think the really options are on the table. Are no, we will wait for the devs to release an upgrade, and everyone will upgrade to that. But again, you know, that's an active decision that needs to be made. You then go, well, who is actually activating that, right? So either way, it's user activated soft fork. If the miners have failed to activate, you're in user activated soft fork territory. And I agree, it's terrible. And so then the question is, how do we do that? And it will be, you know, trying to gather certainty from economic actors and things like that. But if we've spelt it out, this is what will happen. At least they'll have a business plan in place to go, cool, at this mark, we will announce which side we take of this, you know, whatever. And they will achieve consensus. And to some extent, that's useful because I think then it probably prevents the crisis, right? The miners go, well, we're going to be forced into it. So the least painful thing for us to do is to bow, right? And just activate, right? And it goes smoothly. And again, this comes back to them being uniquely economically vulnerable, right? And not being able to hold out very long against economic majority. So I think that in practice probably means that we don't ever have to do it. But if we're getting close to this point, something has gone badly wrong.
I think so. I want to maybe highlight one thing, throw a wrench in, and then I'll let AJ speak. Sorry, AJ. I think just to clarify a tiny bit more of what I was referring to, I think my point was largely that the difference in kind of practical nature of who is activating and what the kind of practical how you go about it is the same between a Flag Day and a UASF. That there's this similar level of we really need to go around and ask people what they're running because we don't know. We need to figure out what different software who's running and who's enforcing the what consensus rules and what the ultimate consensus around the consensus rules will be. And that the UASF dynamic maybe only changes it in that it's maybe easier now for a group of users to try to force a change to the Bitcoin consensus rules. And I guess then to throw another wrench in the conversation, how easy should it be for someone to make a change to the Bitcoin's consensus rules? And how does the UASF dynamic impact that? Does it become easier to make a change because you have this kind of blueprint around, well, if you make enough noise and you make enough hats, then you can make the miners enforce some set of rules because, kind of to Rusty's point, they're uniquely vulnerable to kind of being scared if users say we're going to fork off and this is going to be the new set of consensus rules. You know, does that result in potentially being able to just make noise to change the consensus rules?
Yeah, well, okay, before we let AJ speak, I mean, I think this is an important, like, the three-step process, right? You've got to get through the developers, you've got to have a release to start with, you've got to then have the miners fail to activate. So you've already got through those two stages. So you can't just, like, wear a hat and change the Bitcoin rules. This is the fallback case. We're in the bad case. Miners have failed to activate. We don't have agreement. It's all chaos. And in that case, yeah, I think we're inevitably in that state of, like, now we're in the guesswork game. Okay, we've lost the easy distributed way to measure. How are we going to figure out what everyone else is running and what we're all doing? And my preference there, I mean, you know, AJ and I had some actually detailed talks on what would this actually look like if you had an option in the software to say, cool, I really want to activate, I want to UASF this, right? I want a BIP8 lock in true kind of option. What would it look like? How ugly do you make the option so that nobody, you know, turns it on by accident and stuff like that. How do you signal to the network that you are doing this, which of course signaling is weak, but nonetheless, you have a version bit or something to say, yes, I'm doing this. The other option is just to do a version upgrade. The problem is, of course, again, we want long timelines, right? So you don't want to have this emergency. Well, crap, you've got 4 weeks to upgrade. Everyone upgrade their Bitcoin DEs. And so just from a practical point of view, having it in there from day zero means anyone who's upgraded in the last year already has the option and just has to basically restart with the new option enabled, and they have made their decision. So I think practically that's useful. I mean, it's more engineering in some ways. You can defer the engineering for the flag day activation until you need it. Whereas having it latent in the code, it means that you have to have done the work up front. And no, I'm not volunteering to write the patch. But I will if that was consensus that everyone really wanted it. So I think the positions are not actually that far apart if you've decided that the fallback is user activation. And I don't see a better fallback other than you have user activation or abandonment at this point. And AJ, do you want
to? Well, that's an awesome place to segue in, because I was going back to we've got these two ideas right at the moment. We've got 90-95% signaling and it gets in, which means 5 or 10% of hash power can block it from ever happening, or else we do this, we can't get agreement, we throw up our hands and we do a UASF. But there are other options there, right? Like, we don't have, like, 90% signaling is a choice, and there's various consequences of that choice, but it's still a choice. So a different option that we could do, I think, that I've talked about with Matt and a couple of other people, is that we could do 60% signaling. So you have your proposal, and once you get 60% of blocks in a 2-week period saying yes, let's activate it, then we lock it in and we say, okay, it's going to be active in 6 to 12 months at like some particular time. That's a long way away to give people time to upgrade, and the other 40% time to upgrade. And sure, that's a long time, but we also say, and if miners get up to 95%, then we just lock it in pretty much straight away. So 2 weeks break, and then it's active. And that way, you can still delay it a bit if you've got your 5 or 10% of hash power trying to block things, but you need 40, 45% of hash power to block it entirely, which I'm not sure that ASIC Boost, SegWit, whatever miners would not have been able to maintain 40, 45% to block SegWit, but it's a much bigger ask at that point.
But meet the goal of, you know, keeping the network together and not having needless reorgs, don't you have the same basic issue there across UASF, 60% signaling, like UASF BitBait, 60% signaling, and Flag Day, that, you know, basically before any rule change happens, you want to be damn sure that, you know, hopefully basically all economic actors are running this software.
Right. So with 60% signaling, that's your 51% attack scenario. So if you're mining blocks that are not going to be supported by the 60%, you're going to be on a minority chain and be reorged eventually. So you don't want to do that. And I mean, that would be
You're conflating signaling, like, with actually what miners do, right? Just to be very clear. Signaling is cheap. Actually, changing behavior is more expensive.
I wonder how true that is, because we didn't actually see people just change the signaling straight away. We saw them, as far as we can tell, we saw them upgrade their core node and then change the signaling after that, which I found surprising and really pleasing. So, I mean, it's a definite concern, but...
Yeah, I'm with you on that. That was odd. But remember, you know, we've seen altruistic mining before, right? We've seen them refund people who have stupid fees and stuff like that, which is always gratifying and really nice.
The other thing we've seen is that they haven't actually stolen the Taproot funds that are on chain at the moment, right?
Shh.
But kind of to your point, if you start from the assumption that basically every economic actor is enforcing the rules that say that if there is this threshold of signaling, then you enforce the new consensus rules, then why do you really care what miners are doing? You're kind of just using the signaling to decide at the arbitrary point at which to actually start enforcing the rules versus you're not necessarily using the signaling to keep the network together, the miners to keep the network together, because at 60%, you're basically not going to keep, I mean, you'll keep the network together in the long term, but you still end up with these kind of potentially long range reorgs where like somebody accepted a payment or an exchange deposit at six confirmations, they sold it, they withdrew all the money, and now the exchange is bankrupt because you had a six block reorg.
Right. Yeah, you're not relying on the 60% at that point, though. You're relying on the 6 to 12 months so that everyone actually upgrades and enforces the rules at that point.
Yeah, you're relying on the 60% being basically a cool, it seems to have broad majority, so you should get your shit together and upgrade, which is perfectly fair. And, you know, all these mechanisms are fine, but they all come down to the same. What happens if it doesn't happen? And that's, I guess, the corner case I'm concerned with. Tweaking the numbers and doing a longer delay for lock-in, you know, longer fallow period and stuff is all good and definitely should be on the table. But it doesn't cover the corner of it fails to activate, what do we do?
I guess in my view, you know, aside from kind of the specific details of what specific thing, you know, what the specific consensus rule change is, and I guess my view is just been maybe somewhat consistently Flag Day here, that ultimately the question is how do we, not necessarily what do we do, because I think these are almost all equivalent ideas, but how do we decide when to do it? to bring it, to make it even more meta, is like, how do we decide that, okay, miners block this thing, you know, developers, the broad community of Bitcoin developers decided that this thing was good and that there was agreement around this thing, and no one from the kind of economic actor group spoke up too loudly, and then miners said no and they stopped something. Then, you know, how do we decide, yes, it's go time, we can still do this, we the community? I mean, at this point it's obviously kind of out of the hands of any specific entity. How do we decide, we the community, yeah, we still want this, there's consensus for this, let's do X, and again, frankly, whether X is a Flag Day or a debate UASF or a, you know, 60% threshold reduction, I don't know that it matters what X is.
I think it does. And the reason I think it does is that a failure has occurred, right? Either the developers thought they had consensus, but they actually had groupthink, right? And, you know, I've dealt with FOSS developers for, like, you know, almost all my career. And they're my tribe, right? They're my people, but they have flaws. You know, I've seen various modes of failure in open source developers. I've seen them get corrupt. I've seen them get crazy. I've seen them groupthink, and I like to think, you know, this won't happen. But if you look at Bitcoin as a long-term system and the current wave of developers who retire and get replaced by, you know, the next wave and things like that, you know, there is a question of relying on the developers to fix this at that point, turn around and go, cool, can you release some code that does a Flag Day for us? And remember, increasingly, it's not that easy to replace Bitcoin Core. There's a whole infrastructure built up around, you know, the core releases and everyone upgrades and it kind of goes down these pipes through distributions. And, you know, there's a lot of infrastructure that would have to be replaced if you wanted to run anything else. So even
running the continuous integration tests has been hard to do on a fork because we've just got so many tests that the free tiers don't have enough. Like it's not just hard on a deployment thing. It's hard to even like have the automated tests run. It's a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah. So I think, you know, and these problems are only going to get worse. I mean, we've seen this with Linux, for example, right? The Linux kernel. I mean, there's a whole industry around that basically takes it and delivers it to users, right? And this is increasingly what will happen, like the Bitcoin story, right? There's a lot more infrastructure in place. So going, oh, we should replace this upstream with this alternate client is actually only going to get more difficult and to some point becomes unrealistic. And so what actually happens is everyone goes, oh, well, our plan was to replace, have a, you know, everyone will upgrade, or we'll have this alternate client they should all run and everything else, but it won't happen. And, you know, you end up kind of going, well, you almost default into failed activation, even if you didn't mean to, just because people are like, well, shit, I can't do this in 3 months. We've got all these systems, we've got the CI, we've got all this stuff that we run internally before we do upgrades, et cetera. So, but on the other hand, relying on the developers at that point, when they've demonstrably failed, right? Now, maybe it's the miners who failed, but maybe it's also the developers who failed. Maybe, you know, there's been a failure of consensus here. You know, the devs thought it was all easy, the miners disagreed. And so I have a huge preference for taking them out of the equation at that point. Like, cool, okay, you've had your shot. And it's now up to the economic actors directly to make the decision. And, you know, because as you've pointed out, if you're in this, you're in some kind of either flag day or whatever failure. But I think at this point, the developers have to go, right, well, we will step back. This is not our responsibility. We did our best due diligence. We did everything we could. We've given you all the pieces that you, you know, because I think you do have to give them the pieces. You can't rely on this whole run an alternate client thing. And then the users get to step in and go, right, well, this is our role. Do we want this or not? Do we genuinely want this? And if so, are we prepared to face the miners over it? You know, and if you think about, if that's a model that you want, then you start thinking, well, you're best off having a fixed date for that to happen, right? And that's the BIP 8 style, you know, we will have this thing happen. Whereas if the developers ship a flag day ending, right? So it turns on by itself at a certain point, you've kind of lost that indirection. You've lost that whole point, that you've lost that hard line where the developers go, no. If this set process fails, it's up to you, right? And I like making that explicit because I like the idea that economic actors in the system will have to address this, right? They'll sit down and go, cool. So here's how upgrades happen. And here's what happens if they don't and the miners fail to activate. It's up to us. And what will we do? What's our position on this? What is our business strategy for how we would deal with this, right? You know, and having them think through that. Because I think almost whatever you do, they can end up in that situation. As you said right at the beginning, Matt, at the end of the day, economic actors are what decide what the system is, right? So this at least gives a structure on where they decide, because at the end of the day, they may be forced into that random by random events, right? Some kind of civil war in Bitcoin, they'll have to decide anyway. So at least having a system where you call, you know, you use the devs propose, the miners activate. And if they fail to activate, you know, the users at that point have to do something. Now, do something, maybe they agree on a flag day or something, right? But I think at that point, having developers step back is a really useful bright line to draw, because it says, you know, there is a limit to developer responsibility. And I think we're all pretty sensitive to this, because, you know, we've seen in every single other altcoin where the developers run the show, right? And having a bright line where developers will not go in Bitcoin would be a kind of nice differentiator in a. And there aren't many bright lines we can draw short of this crisis point that I can think of.
Right. I do wonder I agree with you in the sense that, you know, developers shouldn't. I think I would take it a step further. I would say that part of the differentiator is also that users are aware and active before they even switch to running software that would enforce MASF. I think maybe if you get to this point where you want to hit a bright line, you want to say like, oh, this is too complicated, we don't know what's going on, that, you know, part of it is going to be a social consensus, and part of it's going to be that large exchanges, large merchants and transactors, Strike or whoever the biggest bank is in El Salvador, you know, all these entities are going to need to say, here's the consensus rules we're running. But that I think that it is helpful to have that, whether no matter what fork activation method you're talking about, that can be helpful. Obviously the Bitcoin community would be, it's terrible that these big companies are saying what the consensus rules are. But having that be clear and explicit, I think is good, and might itself be that same differentiator that we make more apparent what I think hopefully most developers involved in any fork in Bitcoin have been aware of, is that, you know, there is a very active community in Bitcoin of people who monitor what is going on in the consensus rules, what those changes are being proposed, and who, you know, aren't necessarily active developers in Bitcoin Core, but are just kind of a broader community of individuals who are mostly technical and provide a lot of feedback and provide a lot of pushback as things go on. I would say that that's a bigger and more important differentiator than necessarily saying like, well, this is our bright line. Developers get to decide up until this bright line, and before, like, developers and miners get to decide up until this bright line, and then after that, it's not. I would say that no, in fact, it's kind of this, like, very, I mean, in my mind, somewhat visible, but certainly not visible unless you're kind of steeped in it, process of different groups and constituencies making their voice heard.
Yeah, look, yeah, so you know, using the devs very, very roughly here, right, is, yes, absolutely. And, you know, this is why all the efforts at, like, outreach and increasing, like, awareness and understanding of how Bitcoin works and everything else, and basically increasing the pool, loosely the pool of developers and people who can understand the issues and everything else, is critical infrastructure for Bitcoin, clearly. We need as many people as possible to understand the nuances of how this stuff works on different levels, right? And so that's, you know, you could broadly group those into developers. But I'm assuming at this stage that something has gone wrong, right? That consensus process that was supposed to lead to the software being shipped to get in front of the miners to have them activate, something has gone wrong in there. And so I think at that point, having that, you know, you were supposed to be involved from the beginning, but if you weren't, by the way, you get this decision time where you actively have to make a decision at this point, and making it very clear. There can always be like a blood in the streets moment where basically you can rise up and overthrow the oppressive whatever, right? It's different to having people, you know, to having an organized event where you're cool. Here is this plan. And at this point, this is when you will have to make your voice heard. And hopefully having people know that they, you know, that they have a role in this will encourage them to get involved a lot earlier, and it will never happen. I mean, my assumption is that in practice, we will never see another UASF moment. But I think the chances of that ever happening are significantly reduced if we have this awareness that it could happen again. You know, there's kind of like a bit of a paradox there, but I think it's true. Users have to be aware that they are in control of the system and take some ownership of it, and then it won't get to this state.
What's your take on, you know, one thing that I had proposed kind of a little bit, I think it might have been a little bit before Speedy Trial was proposed in the context of Taproot, or maybe it was a little after, was do a flag day, but specifically do a flag day where, you know, we understand there's a tension between wanting everyone to be running the same consensus rules, and you know, certainly you're in a context where the Bitcoin development community has failed in some way to understand or capture the kind of desire of the broader Bitcoin community. But doing a flag day and saying, okay, here's a flag day, here's some software. It's you know, presumably a branch of Bitcoin Core. It's not a release yet. It's just a proposed patch set, it's a concrete patch set. And saying, look, this is a way forward. We, the development community, you know, we think this might be reasonable, but we're not going to decide. We're not going to like formally decide to do this. And it will become a part of a release if, you know, we see very clear statements from basically every large transactor we can find saying, yes, we are ready to run this ASAP, basically. So saying like, we're going to have all the large entities, all your Squares and your El Salvadors and your Coinbases and your bit refills, you know, whatever large transactors we can find saying, yes, we're going to run this. And then once you see that, once you see all these public statements, you kind of gather them, you point to them, and you kind of take note, hopefully, of lack of any public statements saying no, then you say, all right, look, we have not only this concrete patch set and people say they're running it, but we can point to it and we can say this is very, very clear evidence. And then you don't go down this rabbit hole of, well, something has gone wrong, and now we're going to let chaos rule and potentially let people get screwed by large reorgs.
I think it's the same rabbit hole, though, right? So the problem is that you've redirected the process back through the development approval process, which has kind of failed at this point anyway, right? So you've gone, cool, no, we will decide again.
People can run, right? People can and should run the software prior to that. They should say, like, but, we've taken this patch set, we're running it.
That's really hard. You're better off having it. I think just practically you're better off having it in your everyone software, completely latent, and they can turn it on rather than having to do a rebuild, re-CI, apply patches, all that stuff, right? So because you want breadth in this, you want everyone who has an informed opinion to do this. But the other thing is that in a case where you've got malicious actors and noise, injecting a huge amount of noise in the system, they will gum up that consensus process, right? And so it's going to be messy, right? If there is genuinely, if we've gotten to the point where, you know, miners are not activating, but everyone thought that this was going to be like a good change and it's not, and like confusion will reign, and it will be way worse than it was in the segue. Like it will be, you know, even more noisy and everything else. And so the idea that at that point, under time constraint, you will get this obvious consensus. Because if you had that obvious consensus, everyone knew what the economic actors were going to do, then the miners would just fold, right? You wouldn't have this issue. So trying to see the case where you've got this, you have an amazing amount of noise in the system, right? People maliciously injecting crap to try to go, oh, maybe we do have consensus, maybe we don't, you know? And so trying to get through the review process that now would come under incredible scrutiny through the development review process, which has demonstrably kind of failed to get us here, I think, right, is a step backwards.
So
it's also a minor technical difference.
Add a little more color maybe and then get your take on it again. My first missives about SolveWorks a year and a half ago, I believe I did actually propose this as a configurable flag, where it's not signaling based, it's purely a configurable flag that in 3 years or in, you know, it's some time quite a ways down the road, you turn on the flag and then you state, I'm running this, and on this date, we're going to be enforcing the new rules. Take it or leave it.
Yep. Yeah, no, I prefer that just from a practical point of view, right? That way, everyone's got it if they want it. So there's no massive upgrade cycle required, re-CI, and redo your all internal deployments, etc. As I said, right, we're getting layers and layers of infrastructure between, like, you know, core shipping a release and it actually hitting users. So having it already in there means everyone who's deployed in the last year or whatever has kind of got it if they want it. Just simplifies the practical point of view. So you've removed a barrier where you're accidentally kind of putting your fingers on the scale because you've made it really hard for everyone to kind of opt in. So I think just from a practical point of view, that is the right way to do it. Whether it's a flag day, I mean, I think there's a couple of critical things here. I would love to see nodes being able to flag either way. So flag, yes, I have upgraded. No, I have rejected this upgrade. I think it's a terrible idea. We shouldn't do it. Because that way you can tell the difference between I just haven't bothered and I have an opinion on this. And node signaling, you know, and using, you know, user agent strings and version strings, stuff like that is kind of crappy, but, you know, it is one signal that you can apply. And also, of course, everyone goes out to social media and all those things as well. So I think, you know, activating the feature should also probably affect the default user agent that kind of goes out as well. And it would be nice to have a way in there to also have a way to say, no, under no circumstances will I follow this, right? Go the other way. I think users should also at that point be able to go, no, the miners are right. The devs are fucking insane. And I do not want this, or, you know, whatever, right? I think if you genuinely want to find out what consensus is, you have to give people the option of saying no. And so I would argue that you want this to have both ways. They can not care. They get dragged along. They can say, yes, I'm gonna flag day, or no, I'm not. Damn it, no, I am not. Now, the latter one could actually just be they just change their version string on their software and whatever. Or it could be, you know, it could be more formal where they literally will, you know, refuse to activate whatever. I don't know. But I do think there's a nuance here. It is important that users be able to express their, you know, in this failure case where we've kind of failed to come to consensus, you need to be able to ask the question and get an answer no, even if you don't like it. So I do think there should be a mechanism for users to say no, as well as them to opt into it. If that makes sense.
AJ, do you want to, is there, how do prediction markets and futures markets come into play here? You know, if we get to this point and we're talking about configurable flag days, you know, what does that mean for, you know, how, is there another way that we can measure this outcome, and do prediction markets and futures markets play a role here?
So, I mean, talking about upgrading nodes is very technically oriented, right? Like you're running your own node, you're an admin of your software, you're able to read release notes and figure out what all the different little technical things mean. Like, how much do you expect that the people at Bitcoin Beach that are selling ice creams or something are going to be able to have sensible input to that? So one of the questions is, how much do we want it to be that technical sort of thing versus how much do we want it to be some sort of market-based thing where you've, instead of the, like, you still don't have the people selling ice cream participating, but you've got the DeFi people who don't know how to install software, but do know how to run spreadsheets and move money around. And like, is it, and of course you could have the political sort of thing where it's the really big people, the governments or the big companies running things, and they issue a press release and that's how you decide what's going on. Like, I guess my view is you want as many of those things as possible rather than trying to focus on one. So I'm all for having more sort of market sort of inputs into this.
I don't think
know if Rusty wants to go against that.
No, I don't think you can prevent it either way, right? It's going to happen. And I think more information, I mean, my feeling, general feeling is more information prevents the crisis from happening. Miners know that the wind's going against them and whatever, or miners know that the wind isn't going against them, like that they've got a point, in which case you haven't really got a crisis either. The soft fork fails to activate and everyone's quite happy with it, right? So, you know, I do think these signals are really important, but they don't directly feed into, they can predict what people will do. But I still think you have to give them. So the other another important point here is that it's really nice to have a single agreed on flag day, right? So in the software somewhere, whatever, if it's a flag day or if it's UASF, whatever, there's a specific point at which it happens. And you've created a shelling point, right? It's sort of an arbitrary kind of thing, but if it's the default in the software, that's actually really nice because it gives structure to, like, cool, if I want to approve, if I want to force this or I want to do this thing, You've provided the structure on where to do it, right? You haven't got to have this meta conversation with everyone else who wants to activate it going, what day should it be, right? When should we do it? All these arbitrary decisions are kind of already there. You know, if you want to force this, here's when you force it, right? So that's the other thing about having it in software, is those defaults are really sticky. And so it's nice to have, if it's just in there.
Aren't we all just going to disagree about the date? Before we, I mean, this is kind of what happened with Taproot, right? Like, I think I agree with you in principle, but this is kind of what happened with Taproot, right? Where we, like, you know, we kind of wanted that date to be in there, and then, or at least kind of analogous things, and then no one could agree on what the date was, and then that just kind of prevented Taproot from happening. And then instead, we just ended up with this, let's avoid making these decisions,
so,
and we'll do something.
I don't actually agree with that at all. I think we managed to agree on the dates that we wanted to use quite easily, and we had bunches of disagreements about other trivial stuff, but like the date for when things started, we had disagreements on whether that should be a block height or a date, but the actual date of as of the start of May was really straightforward. And then the 6 months delay, like you could easily argue that no delay or 3 months or 12 months or whatever would be better, but there really wasn't any debate on that. Like, we picked a time when the last version of Bitcoin that didn't support Taproot would be out of its support window, like whatever. And so that'd be all the versions of Bitcoin Core that are currently supported will support doing this. And that, like, we could have quibbled on it, but the date choice wasn't really the issue. It's the, do we make this decision that's going to possibly cause chaos or not, which I think is a much more reasonable thing to argue about.
I guess my point
and the other thing is,
was more just that we couldn't agree on, you know, if we're talking about a date, you know, we're probably talking about like this flag day that's a ways out beyond, you know, kind of a minor activation area. And it's again, we're talking about this, like, if we fail the minor activation part, then there's some issue, and then we have to do this other thing. And we did have a disagreement on the other thing. You know, there was some desire from a number of folks who had very different views, and to some extent, including myself, that we should, in, you know, a version that has, you know, this speedy trial, we should also have something else that comes after it in that same software version. And we did very strongly disagree about what that other thing is. And I think that's analogous to an eventual flag day, that we would have to agree on in advance what that date is.
Yeah, but so, we're not agreeing under pressure. I think Anthony's right. Like, you know, when you're, it's hard to agree if, like, oh crap, is it tomorrow, whenever, like UASF had this problem. But, you know, we're choosing reasonable numbers at the beginning when it's, you're not in crisis, is something we're reasonably good at. And I have some confidence that if we decide how to do it, as Anthony says, right, you know, we come, okay, cool, this is the method, flag day, UASF, whatever. Coming up with the date, the block height, that bit, I think, you know, I'd let AJ choose. That's fine.
So I think the UASF code is targeted about a year and a half away from a year away from when it was going to start, before we thought of the speedy trial stuff, and a year and a half away from when the speedy trial stuff started. Matt, did you want to critique the year and a half and advocate for like 3 years or 5 years or whatever?
I don't know that is where, I mean, you know, we can debate the color to paint the shed, but I'm not super, super obsessed with that. I think it is interesting. You know, I think Rusty just played off, you know, we'll decide if it's a UASF or a flag day or whatever, but that is also a very significant point of debate. And if we're talking about, even especially, I think especially if we're in a context where there isn't this kind of like immediate pressure, if anything, we as a community are gonna debate the paint color for that bike shed even more. Although I don't know that kind of UASF versus flag day is a significant bike shed, that's kind of an important issue.
Yeah, so I mean, the thing about flag day is it's purely opt-in. UASF is the whole, you'll drag along the undersided nodes, right? So there are arguments for both, right? The flag day is like, you know, let's assert that we are going to be in a massive supermajority here, whereas UASF lets us, or sort of, you know, the lock and equals true style, lets us go, cool. We are going to drag along the underside of nodes with us and cause us to be in the supermajority. So you get more leverage out of the former. People who haven't upgraded, you know, get sort of the roundabout way that lock-in equals true works. But the other thing is, the lock-in equals true gives you your forced date, right? It tends to be like this last week of activation, basically, or last period of activation is when it happens. Whereas a flag day could be past minor activation, it could be way out. So there's a technical relation there. But I do think it's a good question. What would you do in this case? Is it better to do a lock and equals true style, you know, the indirect force on the miners to force everyone else to upgrade? Or is it best just to go, no, flag day is clean and simple, but a little bit less visible. Like a lot less visible, I guess.
Yeah, and I think kind of to bring it back to an earlier point, I think one big question I have when we're talking about UASF is, you know, what threshold are we basically putting for how hard it is to make a change to Bitcoin? You know, you mentioned earlier, Rusty, that like, you know, maybe it's okay because we've gotten, in order to get to this point, we've had to have several steps where some group of people honestly believe that there is consensus for this change. But ultimately, when we're talking about this kind of outcome where, you know, we went through this minor activation part and it failed, so clearly the developers don't fully understand what's going on, and the miners might disagree, you know, then what should the ultimate kind of threshold be? Should there be this kind of process by which some group of users makes this threat and says, we're going to activate this, basically whether you like it or not? Or should it be something that's a higher bar that says, you know, we're just gonna split and we're gonna say, we think we have enough people to do this, We think we, the economic majority, the economic actors, think we have enough other economic actors to just do this and run with it. And so we're going to do a flag day. And that's it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can't stop it at that point. At that point, someone is going to go do something, right? Okay, so all the easy job options are off the table. You're now in chaos. What do you get? And I would rather make that decision kind of beforehand rather than afterwards. I think if you feel that, it's a question of what the bar should be at that point. And I genuinely don't know the answer to that one. You know, the UASF or the lock in equals true style where you force the miners at least gives you visibility, right? Whereas a flag day is kind of silent. And so your uncertainty is somewhat increased there too. Although maybe it's less likely to actually fragment the network if not all the miners have upgraded.
Right. And I think this is somewhere where I do have a position and I do advocate a little more for Flag Day, but I think that you also have that same level of uncertainty around, you know, is this active or not just based on miners, but because, you know, you can't just say, well, we're going to let the miners decide whether this is active and I'm just going to look at the miner numbers because they might be wrong too. You know, clearly there's to some extent chaos going on.
Yep.
It is a little uncertain what's going, who wants what, who's running what. And either you ask them what they're running or you don't know and just relying on, say, miners to flagged or not won't necessarily give you that insight. So I do think, I think to some extent Flag Day captures it better because there is that uncertainty and it does just matter what people are running. And so that should be a little more explicit in my mind. And Flag Day kind of captures that.
I'm very tempted to agree with you. I mean, you don't get a conclusion. You don't get a clear conclusion with Flag Day, right? You know when it's over with a UASF, really. At least in the good case where the miners cave and, you know, or you get enough miners to activate. If things have broken down so badly that you UASF and then the miners don't, nobody flags, like people just don't generate those blocks, then that's pretty clear. In the split case, it's kind of weird. But if you get enough to activate, then that drags the majority, you know, presumably drags most of the economic majority along. And then you've also got a conclusion. With Flag Day, you're still like 2 weeks afterwards going, I wonder what the rules are, right? And that point, you start to have to probe and produce bad blocks, which is expensive in order to find out what the miners are actually running and what the nodes will accept and stuff like that. I don't know. I think because at this point we're already in trouble. Our safeties have failed, right? And maybe it is best to go, nope. Then we just fall back on the very simplest thing, which is a flag day. And yes, we're going to have uncertainty. Maybe that's okay. But I'm reluctant to give up on the whole minor flagging thing because it is neat, right? We will kind of know an answer, at least have a visible answer, I think.
I guess I push back on whether it is an answer because it's not visible unless you know what nodes have accepted. Anyway, do we have...
Well, no. I mean, anyone... So if the miner fork where they're forced to flag has more proof of work, right, then at that point, you can be very confident because anyone who's upgraded their software in the last 18 months has now activated, right? So you're kind of like, well, at this point, I'm pretty happy with it, right? So in that case, you've now got certainty. There's no equivalent in a flag day where an outcome... The flag happens and then you don't know. Is the problem, right? So the flag day happens, and even if it was wildly successful and actually every node is running it, and actually all the miners caved and they all did it, you don't have the signaling now to know that.
Is that fair, Anthony?
So I'd put that as you've just assumed that you know that everyone's upgraded to monitor the signaling over the last 18 months. I think Matt's idea is that everyone's upgraded and therefore they're enforcing the flag day over the last 18 months. So like you're still doing the kind of look at the nodes and see what they're running there and assuming that your conclusions are correct from that.
No, because the flag day was not the default
as well myself.
Yeah, no, the flag day wasn't the default, right? The There was never any software that shipped that had the flag day in from day one, right?
But you still have the same issue of you don't know if users are enforcing the rules, and miners might change next week, right? And we have seen, you know, miner migration. We've seen different pools come and go. And so you can't just rely on, you know, our pools enforcing this and our miners enforcing these rules, because you can totally have, you know, if this were our threshold, I think if our threshold is miners signaled during this period of chaos, and you know, hopefully every user is running this, then you know, would you trust holding your coins in that? I don't know that you should, because you don't know. You have to, at the end of the day, you have to somehow determine whether users are enforcing those rules.
Well, I mean, if all the software released in the last 18 months has been activated, then I think I'd be pretty happy with it. If you added a flag day later, and if you shipped with the flag day at day zero, then maybe, but then you've basically just got lock in equals true effectively, right? You've kind of just gone, well, no, if miners veto it, then the devs just override and it just, the software will just turn it on anyway. So fuck you. Which may be a perfectly valid thing, but I'm pushing back against that model. So if you've got a model where people have to opt into the flag day, now you've lost signaling as well. So I'd be a lot less confident in the outcome in that case. So I think, and I think this is what Anthony was coming around to too, there's the preference for miner signaling here. But I don't think it's equivalent to having a flag day, unless the times are so long that you can go, well, anyone, you know, we've had the flag day on the table for 18 months, say, I think that's a reasonable threshold. So anyone who's upgraded in the last 18 months is doing the flag day thing. And I'm reasonably happy with that, maybe.
And I think I've also suggested, you know, I mentioned earlier, and you pushed back a little bit, but I still kind of like the model of, you know, you release software that has an option for it, and then through the course of 18 months, 24 months, whatever, you monitor, you know, what are people running? And you go ask people, and you go ask exchanges, and you go ask large transactors, and you get them to make public statements, and you look at what's running on the network, and you look at, you know, what nodes who've been online for 5 years are running. And based on that, you should very reasonably be able to determine, yeah, everyone's running this. The next version of the software is going to have this flag day on by default, and people can turn it off. Maybe that changes, you know, you change the default such that now people are very confident in it. And I think that model is also, it isn't devs override, because you're still very clearly determining based on what users are running. And I think that's ultimately, no matter what, that's what matters is what users are running, or what economic actors are running. And that model still kind of has that nice property of keeping the network together without, in my mind, the potential chaos that comes from a kind of UASF style force signaling model.
Yeah. No, I'm actually reasonably happy with that. I think that would be a perfectly sane method to use, right? Unfortunately, I'm going to have a hard stop now because I think my kids are waking up. But you know, I think the thing is here that we didn't get into a chair fight, which is kind of interesting. But also, you know, I think there are genuinely good questions, some of which delve deep into the technical, and some of which are more meta about this. But I think, you know, I think there is a kind of a broad consensus on how the system works, and it's a question of, you know, how do we minimize the chance that this stuff ever happens, but also kind of be, you know, I think everyone does crave some degree of certainty in what would be a chaotic and uncertain time. So what, you know, what can we do and what can't we do is a useful area for exploration. So I want to thank you, Matt, for organizing this. I will now bow out and let you and Anthony fight over, I don't know, find something, I guess.
Coffee. Australian coffee is terrible.
Fuck you, Matt. Fuck you.
Finally got roasted to disagree strongly. All right. Well, you know, I guess, you know, unless I'll let AJ, you bring up whatever concluding thoughts you want. And then I think I have this whole recorded, so we can publish it afterwards.
Yeah. So my thought is that we should try something. Like if you never actually run the code, then you've got no idea if it works. So if we want to have UASF background backup plan, we should do something that actually uses the UASF backup plan. And so my thought is we should pull some of the consensus cleanup ideas out and actually do them, assuming miners had opposed it, even though they've got no particular reason to. So like do the time warp fix as some sort of UASF attempt, or do the 64 byte transactions as some sort of UASF attempt.
Or just a flag
otherwise
day.
I've been, what's that?
Or just a flag day. Do a flag day 3 years out, call it.
Yeah, sure. UASF flag day, whatever.
Yeah, I'm down. Let's do it. Soft fork 3 years out, flag day. No more 64 byte transactions. No time warp.
Dude, I'm in.
All right, sold.
So what we call that, we call that the Twitter Spaces agreement, right?
Yeah, yeah. So this is how we decide Bitcoin, two people.
So did you want to see if you can give someone else a voice and let them have comments or something, or is that not how Spaces work?
I mean, no, we can add some folks if anyone else has a comment or a question, but I'm probably going to run out in not too long as well. But if anyone wants to raise their hand, if they have a question, I guess we can answer briefly here. Let's see. Anyone? If Wave, if you've got a question. Nope. All right. Well, I'm gonna see what Warren has to say. Nope. And we lost Warren. All right. Well, let's try some other folks.
I just wanted to ask a quick question, not directly related, but somewhat related because it's a soft fork. So Anthony, when are we going to get the updated bit for any prev out merged?
Well, I hadn't realized it was in conflicts at the moment, so I'll fix that. And I had been leaving it in draft until we'd actually had proper tests for the thing, which we've had some progress on, but I haven't looked at that for the last 3 months or something. But there's no real reason for it not to be merged.
Thanks.
All right, we're gonna bring Mark up and see what he has to say. Warren asked again, let's see. For some reason, Twitter Spaces takes forever for someone to join once you've added them as a speaker. I'm not sure why. And sometimes they just fail to join. All right. Well, it seems like we're having technical issues actually managing to get anyone else up here. So let's call it. And we've been going for about an hour and a half anyway, so try one more time with Mark, but we'll call it. And thanks, and AJ, and thanks, Rusty, obviously, who's now gone, for joining and for participating here. I thought it was hopefully quite useful for people. Mark?
Yeah, we're just wrapping up, so maybe I don't reopen the Barra. But
go for it.
So it became recently more apparent to me that once we want to do cross-input signature aggregation, we will need another output format for that. And I was wondering...
Do we? Why? Why do we?
Because...
We need SegWit version 2 for that, because we want to enable cross-input signature aggregation of keypath spends.
Oh, but right. You could just not do keypath spends.
Boo.
Well,
you can't flag the signature and say this is a signature of type 3 that implies aggregated and keypath spends and whatever.
No, I don't think so, because otherwise it would have had to have been part of Taproot rules, and it's not.
Yes, good point. Yes, okay. Duh.
Right. So what kind of worries me about that is that we'll be splitting the anonymity set yet again in order to to get cross-input signature aggregation, which is supposed to be this privacy enhancement, because people are economically incentivized to coin join.
I guess you could always do a keypath spend that has an off accept, but then you'd have to always do a keypath spend, which is bigger. Continue.
Yeah, you could. So if we did enable cross input signature aggregation, I think that would be a really good excuse to do a hard fork to also enable cross input signature aggregation on all the old Dust transactions. And if you were doing a hard fork, then you could enable it on Taproot as well. But obviously, hard fork 10 years out, maybe? I don't know.
Isn't it harder, though, because most of those are ECDSA keys?
Well, they're SecP keys, but then you could, if you did a hard fork, you could sign them with a Schnorr signature.
That's true, yes.
Anyway, maybe it's more of a Taproot question, but on what grounds do we stop Taproot now so we can get it with cross-input signature aggregation in the first place?
Yeah, maybe we should have. I think that ship might have sailed. Are we locked in yet? I think we're basically locked in now.
It's 450 blocks left.
All right. Basically,
we've still got a couple of days of signaling, maybe. And we haven't really finalized all the maths that we want for that. Ideally we'd want to include GRUT and GraphGRUT, and that would be how we'd do the cross input signature aggregation. And the GraphGRUT stuff would ideally have the non-interactive half signature aggregation stuff, which hasn't really been fully spec'd out as to how we do that securely. And there was a paper that came out a couple of months ago now, I guess, which had a proof of that I haven't read, but is at least promising. So, I mean, we've got a path forward for it, but saying let's just drop Taproot and do that, I think that would be a huge delay. So I don't really think that's worth it, even though the whole privacy thing is kind of annoying because we'd have to have a new set of distinguishable keys.
Yeah. Right. Thanks for entertaining me.
All right. Well, let's call it, since it's so hard to get anyone up here anyway. And thanks for joining. I guess maybe we can do these a little more often in the future. We'll see.
Yeah. Thanks, Matt. That was good.
All right. Cheers. Thanks for everyone who stuck around for an hour and a half.